At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
And welcome back to Blunt Business here on CannabisRadio.com. Thank you all for joining us here on the program. And if you haven't done so, make sure to go ahead and subscribe wherever you find this podcast. So again, Apple, Amazon, Spotify, YouTube, YouTube Music. Make sure to go and look for where you find the show. And again, if you want to find it in the form where you want to catch it on a YouTube feed or in the YouTube Music app or wherever you find it, or just right from CannabisRadio.com and the Cannabis Radio app, make sure to go and do so. And make sure to go and rate, review wherever you can do so. We'd love for all that feedback to come back from all of you. As you always go into it every week, great guests, and we have another wonderful guest to bring on. We're talking the area of financial, loans, investments, etc. So my next guest regularly provides cannabis banking education expertise to legislators, regulators, attorneys generals, state officials, and financial institutions. More than a decade of experience building and scaling businesses, including a tech platform and turnkey retail model tailored to the cannabis industry, her financial services firm specializes in offering compliance, monitoring, and validation services to financial institutions while providing traditional banking services to cannabis, hemp, CBD, and ancillary operators. We welcome back onto the program the CEO of Safe Harbor Financial, Sundi Seyfried. Sundi, thanks for being on with us.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
We had you on our Freedom to Buy program, I think it was late last year. I would have loved to take that interview myself, but the opportunity gave for us because, you know, Safe Harbor just got off of their annual earnings call, just had that yesterday as we record this program on April 2nd, and an 85.3% increase in annual revenue for the year 2023. That is amazing. So, by the way, if you're looking, all of you stock aficionados, on the NASDAQ, stock ticker SHFS or SF Holdings, look for that. So you've had strategic expansions. You introduced new lending and deposit products. The revenue went up to $17.6 million. That's almost, well, pretty much double from $9.5 million last year. And it's attributed to a diversified revenue mix and high margin lending program that reduced dependency on deposit fees. Sundi, you know, are you trying to go make your shareholders money or something? Because, like, you know, sounds like you far above and beyond exceeded goals.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we had actually put some guidance out there in July after second quarter that we were going to hit somewhere around $16 million and the year was looking good. And a lot of it has to do with diversifying the income. So we're trying to get there. But I think the more important thing is being in financial services, we're building the foundation upon which to make our investors money, because you have to have a rock solid foundation in financial services with a lot of trust and a lot of relationships that will attract more cannabis businesses to us. So I think in 2023, we focused on fundamental issues that are important to the cannabis industry and financial services, and built that lending program, which was really good. You know, there's pricing pressures. There's always going to be competitive pressures, but we worked on diversifying that income and launching that new credit program across the board and having rock solid relationships. We want the full relationship with our clients as we go forward.
Also trying to go ahead and make it where you're trend setting the market before any other mainstream financial services will have the wherewithal, have the guts or the gusto to go ahead and jump into the industry before waiting for some kind of legislation to say that, oh, we can go in, we can come in here without any risks involved. But the thing is, you're jumping right into the fire and doing that. And with that said, because of the cost, and we get green lighting of new markets opening up every year. So Ohio, Minnesota now opening up now for adult use. Florida is going to get it on the ballot. That's finally just got announced yesterday. Supreme Court made all the way through for the petitions to be allowed, put on the ballot. So I think 2025, we get a few more states come in. Does that, the green lighting of new adult use markets, does that help to continue the further growth and the trajectory that Safe Harbor Financial expects for its shareholders?
Absolutely. But for us, you know, we've already set up a platform that we are presently taking cash from 41 different states at this point in time. So we can expand in those markets. What I think the market needs to remember, though, is just because it gets on the ballot, just because it gets approved, it takes a launch time. I mean, look at how long it's taking New York to give out licenses, right? So they've been legal for a while, getting licenses out there. It has to ramp up at the state level to have that positive impact on Safe Harbor. But we're right there, front and center, to make sure that we're talking to those clients. You know, at this point in time, when they're getting their licenses, they actually have to have a bank account to secure that license. So we call those pre-operational accounts, in hopes that, you know, as soon as you get operated, you're inundated with Safe Harbor products and services, and you know we're going to be there. So, yeah, I think it's just the matter of timing and ramping up those states for the positive impact on Safe Harbor. There has to be patience involved, because it just doesn't happen overnight.
Recently, I spoke with the folks at LeafLink over here on our grassroots bargaining program about the increase in sales. And we really got to the crux of the idea of how, when you see markets that are opening up, to just even curb the illicit market, just to curb the amount of sales revenue that can come in for the businesses, that you need to have that ratio switched up, that you need to go and, you know, whatever you have to do and do to get as many dispensaries open as possible to curb any illicit market, to also allow more companies just to go ahead and be able to go ahead and take care of the proximity of having enough people to go and get access to cannabis as they want. And there's no real rhyme or reason to it. Colorado has a pretty good example. But what we've learned so far from what Colorado's done doesn't apply to what New York or New Jersey or Illinois or other states can do, and others that will come down the line. So you have that to still consider. New York only went to 100 legal dispensaries, but yet 10, 15,000 illegal ones they're trying to go and crack down. So the money being put towards law enforcement, you're taking away from whatever you're making back in revenues. And I know you do quite a good consulting, I guess, when it comes to policymakers. What do they think about that? Because the truth is, the money is there. Like, they don't realize, they're not economists, but they also don't realize, okay, by filtering out so much and allowing so few legal businesses to open up, all that money being taken away from illicit operators they can't get?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. You know, two points on that. First, I'll talk about the Florida market, which is a very large market already, just on a medicinal. Yeah. What I think you will see there, and what I have realized in other states as we've expanded, was the companies end up alleviating or selling their medicinal licenses because they just want the recreational licenses. And so a lot of the medicinal customers actually switch over to the flexibility of recreational. Even though it's taxed more, they have more options rather than parking their medical license with one dispensary. So I think that's going to be an interesting statistic to watch as Florida opens up. As far as New York goes, which I believe California has the same problem, and I believe Texas will have the same problem too, there's been such a large black market that has been allowed without law enforcement pressures to exist. I always like to say, and you might be too young to remember this, but you remember, there used to be, when I was growing up, your brain's on drug, right?
Oh, yeah, I grew up on that. Absolutely.
Okay. Now I think if law enforcement wants to assist the legal market, I think they're going to have to do some campaigning that says, your brain on illegal cannabis, right? Because that's going to be the difference, the quality between, you know, the cannabis that's monitored and that's regulated and the cannabis that isn't. So I think there's a lot of factors in there where the states, if they want to boost the revenue, they want to support the industry, and they want the success that we've seen in Colorado or we've seen in Washington and Oregon, they're going to have to step in there and help the legal market succeed.
And that's also the part with social equity, where you might have those legacy operators that might want to be able to go and operate legitimately and legally in the space, but there's this, the pathway they have to be able to get there is so few far between, it's very difficult. And about who they offer licenses to. But again, I've talked about that extensively on the program. I don't want to get back into that again, but there's areas where some of these things can be alleviated. But, you know, it's like, who's going to get the government, in other words, state, local, federal, to pay attention to that? That's the part of what it comes down to it. So now, let's go ahead and talk about Safe Harbor in general, that doing business in Safe Harbor Financial mentioned now over $21 billion in deposit transactions for businesses. You mentioned spanning over 41 states and territories and regulated cannabis markets. And you talked to Tip Ranks. I'm going to refer to them quite a bit because they did a really good interview, but I wanted to get more out of what they talked to you about. So you're talking about expanding our services, quote, to meet the needs of the industry and where you're keeping track of what our clients' needs are. And you mentioned that Safe Harbor can provide clients with multiple bank accounts through one platform, saying, quote, it is of interest to a lot of them simply because they want the insurance company by utilizing multiple financial institutions, and this coverage should be effective, especially after Safer making it, to cover the deposits. Now, talk to me about circumnavigating all this regulation you still have to go through, because again, we mentioned the banks, the credit unions, conventionally, they don't want to go through all this, but you are going through all this regulation, all this red tape, bureaucracy, where you've been able to meet a lot of financial needs to the portfolio companies you serve.
Well, you know, and I said it in my earnings call yesterday that one of our competitive advantages is we are solely dedicated to the cannabis financial services. So we're not distracted by any other market that requires banking. We're not distracted by other, it doesn't mean we can't go there down the road, but our interest is all about cannabis banking and getting those services to them. So as a competitive advantage, we have the expertise, we have the drive to do nothing but build products and secure products that do nothing but serve the cannabis business needs. That is actually how we launched starting in 2015, is we didn't know the market. It was under the radar. We had no idea what their needs were. And we had to learn the companies. And then every time they presented an obstacle, we presented a solution. And that's how we grew. So I wish I could say I was brilliant, but I really just followed the market in terms of what their needs were. And that's what we'll continue to do. And the platform, it is true with Safer, you know, there is a segment in there that talks about insurance and they cannot be excluded from federal insurance up till this point in time. And I've been asked this question 1,000 times, are my funds insured? And I'd say, you're federally legal and it's a federal insurance, you know, coverage. And so if they wanted to exclude you, they could, but it's never been tested. At this point in time, I think that question goes away. By having the ability to go through the fintech platform and have an account at, say, 3 different places, you can spread that risk and ensure you have some coverage of insurance regarding. But what I also tell people is look at the underlying financial institution and their status to make sure they're safe and sound. Don't go get somebody who's just being reckless. Know that they understand how to serve the business if they're specialized. We pick, well, for instance, Partner Colorado. Now we've been doing it since 2015. We all understand the business there. They are not going to sidestep to do anything to interrupt that platform, you know, or the other banks that we're looking at, they're fintech specialists. They like to do banking as a service for people like us and yet not have to serve the cannabis industry directly. So they're good, strong companies as far as banks and financial institutions that we look to partner with.
You also think about the fact that, first of all, there's a trust of what your firm is doing right now and securing their funds, which with your background, I would have no doubt thinking that you are, you know, you have your experience. You know what is necessary to go and make sure those funds are secure. The other part, too, is that these companies that are coming in to go and work with you, how many of them are actually have, it's their money they're actually putting on the table or investors' money they're putting in that, you know, the investors alone, how many times have they put into a cannabis company and that money's been squandered? And, you know, like the mismanagement of funds going on, that's gone on a long time. Let's just say that too. There have been a lot of company, I'm saying it myself, not with a disclaiming that right there. We know there's a lot of companies that have mismanaged funds that were given to them, all this seed round funding, which is why folks in Wall Street or those in Silicon Valley, they're not willing to go and jump in until all these other regulations have been put in place. So even those that want to go in and say, well, this is still fringe, and then they want to jump in, they think, well, we're just going to throw money away by investing in this company. But then if they're putting their money in towards Safe Harbor, we know it's in the right place, but it's like you need to protect not just the businesses, but the investors that are putting their money into it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, interesting. We actually saw that what you would call squandering or excessive spending or unmonitored spending really start in 2018. So we were in there in 2015 and right. We saw the bootstrappers. We saw those people who gave their you know, sweat and blood to getting their businesses up and running and protecting every dollar and making it work, you know. And it wasn't until 2018 when you started seeing some of this consolidation and then big raises and then lots of acquisitions that go out there. Mm-hmm. But then in the last 2 years, what I have seen from these same companies is the fact that they've had to get efficient to manage to investor expectations. So you're seeing that, you know, that crossing state borders and gobbling up as many dispensaries and cultivations isn't going to work any more than it's going to work for me if I don't maintain management of expenses. That's the killer, you know, the killer in any growing business if you're not managing expenses. And just to give you an example, we have managed our expenses down all year. A lot of those expenses came from the de-SPAC that we had to deal with in this year, but we continue. I come from a banking background, ran a credit union for 20 some years.
Yeah.
Very, very conservative. You know, you don't just spend money without justification and return on assets. So I can say that I watch, I'm one of those CEOs that CFOs look at and say, well, maybe you know a little too much for your own good.
Well, but if listeners want to go ahead and check out and learn more about the process of where you worked for the credit union and you transitioned to the cannabis industry, highly recommend you go back and fall back up on the Freedom to Buy interview you did with Joe Dworsky late last year. I would definitely tell you to go back and follow up on that. Now, the other thing, too, is that you mentioned 2018, but also think about the fact that when I first got to go in the conferences in 2016, I mean, the influx of corporate professionals, Fortune 500 types that were making their way, or Fortune 5,000 types, making their way out of other companies that, you know what, we're going to go into this space, we're going to cannabis. And how many of those might have come in and then come right back out? Because you wonder, okay, when corporate infrastructure, that corporate, you know, micromanagement comes into play, you know, how many of them are in there for the right reasons too? Because that's one of the things I also noticed as well, is that there are those, yeah, they're just coming for the money grab. They want to come in and make money off of this. So how many of them are in here with the right intent to build a business or just come in here, grab a whole lot of money and then get out?
You know, it's funny you bring that up, because when we first got into the business and some of these larger companies were coming in the door and they'd be saying, our CFO comes right off Wall Street. And I'm like, not the thing you want to tell the banker.
No, no.
Not after I survived the Great Recession, right? Wasn't impressive, because that's what really killed banks and harmed us, you know, during that time. So it wasn't a big seller, but I think that the complexity of the business and the regulatory environment, I think they get in and they don't realize, like, we would have accounts that we have 26 different accounts because of the way their attorneys told them to structure the business, trying to protect their assets differently because they didn't know how it was going to work. We're now seeing that get reversed. We're now seeing that there's enough comfort in banking. There's enough comfort in the fact that, you know, they're not being penalized. They're not being confiscated. They're not, you know, people aren't taking over their funds, that they're consolidating their accounts and getting more efficient. But they still have these problems because of 280E, the IRS code. And they've got to structure things so they'll come in with three or four types of accounts. They have a, you know, a holding account. They have a management account. They have a payroll account. They have a lease, right? They separate all their businesses because this over here is ancillary, not really cannabis touching. And then the only one that's really impacted then by 280E is the one that's truly cannabis, you know, cultivations and dispensaries and that type of thing. So that's the complexity I don't think people realize that they were getting into when they jumped in with 280E.
But, you know, we'll talk about 280E very shortly, because when it comes to descheduling, how that's going to most likely go away. I really do believe that's one of the things that's going to be a lever that's going to finally get pulled that's going to benefit the cannabis industry. But we'll talk about that later on later on in the program. But I want to get now into loans. So you talked to Tip Rakes and mentioned that, quote, one of our fastest growing income elements is interest on loans. And in the past, we've always relied much more on depository fees. So our objective in the last year and presently is to grow the loan base to diversify our income in different areas. Growing that base allows the company to be more competitive with pricing and a relationship level. It is really in our best interest to not only keep long-term client relationships, but for safe harbor financial to offset the interest again income against relationship fees, depository fees, or other program fees of which companies take advantage. We've been talking a lot about social equity programs, Sundy, and the obstacles those companies have had with dealing with public-private bank partnerships involved with investment funds, 12, 13% interest rates in New York, according to what NPR reported, to where those interest rates and what they're asking for can be almost predatory loans. So when companies that look at social equities, that do look at social equity, and they think, well, they could leverage the opportunity, they don't need it, but they could probably qualify through it. Could you see these companies faring better seeking out a loan from a firm like Safe Harbor instead of one of those social equity investment funds?
So here's what we're seeing. And understand, we're still, I would consider, a startup when it comes into the lending arena. And you are aware, probably, the market is tight on credit at this point in time. There, a lot of banks pulling in, their tentacles, not doing as much lending. So we need to be careful. We're also at the stage where we can still cherry pick the type of loans. We want to build that foundation I talked about. We want solid real estate loans. So many of the licensees, even social equity licensees coming in, they might want to leverage their expertise or their license, but banks aren't so comfortable going out there with projection loans. And we actually have to work with true real estate, true collateral, because we're utilizing the bank balance sheet. We're not just being able to do it. We're not, again, not investor money, right? If you want to go to some of the other companies, they got investor money, they can take a higher risk, they can charge a higher rate. We charge, still there's a premium on, because there's a lot of work involved. Some of our loans span four states, and you have to hire attorneys in every state. You've got to hire appraisers in every state. There's just a lot of work and legal stuff that goes into that that makes it a little more expensive in terms of cannabis, but we're still building the foundation, but mostly on real estate. So when we get a startup coming in the door, we're more likely to say, if you're a company of ours and you're doing business with us and we are seeing your cash flow, because cash flow and credit go hand in hand, then, maybe we'll start with a line of credit with you. But we've got to know the customer. And we owe this to our financial institution partners to be that safe and sound in how we select our partners. We're not borrowing from investors. We're utilizing banks and credit unions.
There's more I'm going to follow up on this, because I want to also talk about lines of credit and what you're offering in terms of what kind of loans you can offer to companies. Because in the process, it's just like maybe in credit unions, it might have been a different story about what kind of parameters you might put in place before you offer a loan or a line of credit to a company, because it has to be much something different here because of where regulations still lie. It's not uniform in every state. There's a whole lot of other dealings to go through, which your team is willing to go and go through and make the effort for, which is really very commendable. I'm again here with Sundie Seefried, CEO of Safe Harbor Financial, ticker, by the way, on the NASDAQ, SHFS. And coming back, we'll talk more about the lines of credit for clients that cannabis businesses are able to go and get, and the real qualifications behind it. And we'll go a little bit more into the financial details from your financial earnings call from yesterday, and what rescheduling, and again, the happy talk that talks about, when we get legalization, when we get safe banking, when we get all this and that. Okay, we'll deal with that. All coming up after a short break.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Welcome back. I'm here with Sundie Seefried, CEO of Safe Harbor Financial. Website is shfinancial.org, shfinancial.org. Let's get back into it. Now, you've worked in the credit system, we already mentioned, coming up on four decades. Congratulations. So it's like, you've seen so much. Again, you talked about the Great Recession. You also, you go back, you can also see you talked about working in the banking system during the Wall Street crash of 87, going so far to say of all these different areas. You've seen a lot of, ebbs and tides in the financial system in general, and you've been a part of that. Now, Safe Harbor has been focused on launching lines of credit for clients since last fall, and you mentioned now, quote, cannabis businesses are highly taxed and it's difficult for them to always meet their obligations. A line of credit has not always been readily available to them. So, and there's a lot of reasons that you can say why, but like qualifying the right company, Sundie, that you focus on when you transition, there's a lot that you could say, okay, certain parameters you could probably go and say like, okay, if this company's cash flow positive, but the assets they're, what would they have in there in terms of collateral, do they have enough to go and say, okay, we might give a little more leniency to a loan here. How many more parameters do you have to put in place before a company gets a line of credit?
Well, you know, that's interesting. You know, if we go back to the KYC that's required for cannabis businesses in the financial world, you have to understand that business, you have to understand their ownership. And, you know, in the consolidating market, ownership changes frequently. In a growing market, officers change frequently. So we are constantly monitoring this so that we know our customer. But the biggest part of getting and securing a line of credit is having the relationship with the financial institution or the service provider like us. We see the money come in every month. We see change in ownership. We see change in officers. Let's face it, if you're changing out your CFO every 3 months, isn't that a red flag to the bank? So there are certain things. So the KYC aspect is what builds the comfort, but the cash flow into the business. So let's say you've had an account with us for the last 6 months. We see all your money coming in. We see all your money going out. We understand the business model. We're comfortable that you have cash flow to service that debt, that you also have a relationship with your banker that gives us comfort, because a lot of that stuff comes right from the banker. Like they want to be compliant. They want to provide documentation. They're not afraid to provide documentation. This is, you know, this is where you're separating out the good actors from the bad actors. We get a client who says, I don't want to provide you that. It's a red flag, right? We have to know that only good money is going into it. So that KYC and having a relationship is where it all starts to get a line of credit. And the second part of it is, you know, we'll take your cash flow and say 2.5 times your average monthly cash flow is probably the line of credit you can get. So it really is dependent on relationship there again.
KYC, know your customer. I actually had to go look that up because I wasn't sure what that was, but I know it's probably very familiar with in your space. And when I look at what is required, now you talk about debt, you know, do you also have to keep a different set of parameters from conventional to cannabis when it comes to how much manageable debt they're holding on to?
Absolutely. We definitely look at every aspect of the business. It's underwriting in cannabis is very much in line with a normal commercial lending program from a financial institution with the plus of cannabis, right? You know, are you licensed? Are you meeting your state obligations? Are you doing on your state reporting? But again, that comes from relationship, because if you're a client of ours, we're seeing that you're doing this every single month. We know that you're talking to the state. We know you're paying your taxes. We know all that good stuff. So when we know, again, you know, the cash flow on the account, you want to know that when you're making loans that will impact your investor return, that you're going to get that ability to service the debt. That's the most important part at this point. And then maybe a year later or a year and a half later, you come back to us and we say, sure, we'll consider maybe that equipment loan. You've been servicing your debt properly. You're meeting your projections, because we still look at what the projections are. We still want to know where they're growing. And so that monitoring is constant, but it also supports a bigger type relationship with each of our businesses.
We started out the program where I mentioned your financial results for the full year 2023. Better than expected revenue, again, double, due to significant growth to lending income as well as the rising rate environment. Yeah, the rates have been huge. And, you know, the only thing I've gotten out of edge of that is just putting money into a CD that was like, well, threw me 3 times more than what was expected, you know, say a couple of years ago. So that's been nice. But now the rising rate environment, you said for yourselves, worked to your favor in 2020, because not only did we have higher loan rates, we also earned more interest on our deposits. A couple of years ago, we were earning maybe 25 to 35 basis points on deposits. But in 2023, we were earning 4.5 to 5% of those deposits at certain points in time. It's like almost like, it's like those banks during the years of the Cocaine Cowboys in Miami that would get like 5% off of loans for all the money that was being brought in that would be converted from cash to deposits, like that. But now, a great income driving factor for your team. Now, how do you feel about the possibility that this rising rate environment can sustain for a while longer? We know the Fed chair has already said, oh, we're going to start cutting rates 3 times this year. I don't think that's going to happen. I think that's happy talk. Do you see where the rates just continue to just sustain? I don't care if inflation, they can say whatever they want to say, inflation is going down. The rates are not going down. Do you think the same way?
I have a feeling, yeah. I think I watched the rate market for 20 plus years. I know you said 4 decades, but let's not age me too much here.
You don't look it. Nobody, listen, you can tell anybody whatever age you want. I'm going to believe whatever you tell me. Trust me.
But, you know, first of all, rising rates was great. And it was on deposits where we made a lot of money. So yeah. we either have those deposits at 4.5% or 5%, or we loan those deposits out at 10%. So, you know, we win even if rates go down because we can still continue to make loans. But of course, it's tied to the overnight funds and the cost of funds. And the factor, the thing is maybe a year ago, we were making loans at 8.5%, 9%. And now we're making loans at 10.5%, 11% because of rising rents is good for us on both ends, deposits and lending. So if it goes down, we're still going to make money, whether the deposits sit there in overnight funds and get that 4% or 3%, or it goes to lending and gets 7, 8, 9, 10%. So, and on a very secure real estate loans, which is what we really look for a lot, you know, we're going to follow the market and still be able to optimize our earnings.
That's amazing. And, you know, that's just the way the market is. And like I said, getting 10 to 11% that you're getting now. And like I said, when it comes to these social equity funds, you know, the folks of like Chicago Atlantic, 12 to 13%. That's still, you're still a much manageable more rate of on the loans than you are for other banks. That's very competitive, which is really wonderful to go and see that as well. We're going to go back to one more commercial break because I want to go and talk. And again, the happy talk of these wonderful people. Listen, and I understand it's fun to talk about wishful thinking, you know, cautiously optimistic, all these wonderful phrases we hear about when it comes to the industry. Oh, we're going to get legalized. We're going to get safe banking. Look at all the moves that are being done and the stories that keep being published. Oh, you know, look at these senators, all these wonderful policymakers trying to make some moves. Okay, well, you know, we're waiting. It's like, it's, you know, if people think that, you know, there's not enough lobbying money to get push people to go into it. I will continue to say again, supermajority in Congress of House and Senate. Once you have a supermajority in Senate, and it doesn't matter if a bipartisan, this issue is bipartisan. Once you have that locked in place, then put a bill in front and they can probably pass it. And until then, I'm not worrying about that. Legalization, 3 to 5 years. To me, Safe Banking Act, maybe next year, maybe after that, who knows? But I'm not going to, I don't want to concern people about that. But I think the scheduling, that is feasible. That's very possible. We're going to talk about that here with Sundie Seafried, CEO of Safe Harbor Financial, here on Blunt Business, back after a short break.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
I'm back with final questions with Sundie Seafried, CEO of Safe Harbor Financial. Couple things just to make mention of while we wrap up the interview. Website is shfinancial.org. Make sure to go ahead and check out all that, and we'll ask Sundie about what you should be doing when you go to the website. And for all of you stock ticker aficionados, they are publicly traded under SF Holdings, their NASDAQ ticker symbol SHFS. Make sure to go and check out both of those things. So we mentioned you were on Freedom to Buy. And Joe likes to really go more into the meat of, like, you know, those that are making their way into the space and, you know, just understanding just the real makeup of what you do for the business. But I really, again, on a show like this, talk about these current issues and what you're doing, how you're doing with those issues when it comes to loans, lines of credit, investment through Safe Harbor. That's why I love to do these kind of interviews with on Blunt Business. So I'm glad you came on to really, you know, join me for these questions I wanted to ask you. So let's get into it now about, you recently said that rescheduling is a great thing. It needs to happen. And you're really excited for the industry if it does, but I'm probably more positive about safer banking passing. I still see any congressional action being years away, in my opinion, until a supermajority in the Senate and House becomes possible. I said that before the break. So I want to ask you about the possibility of companies seeking to reinvest in funds that they can reclaim once the 280E burden is taken off of them by way of descheduling. What could you see these companies doing with that extra 10 to 12% back?
Oh, wow. I think that's a great thing for the companies. You've done your homework and read my article. I think that, you know, it's going to allow them greater access to credit. It's going to give them greater cash flow, greater performance. It's also going to, I think, attract investors who are looking for companies who are making a profit. Some of them are literally, as I said from the very beginning, banking on the future, you know, when there is no 280E. So maybe breaking even or you know, 80% effective tax rate. So I believe access to credit, greater levels of deposits, which is good for us. And of course, you know, Good cash flow to support any credit opportunity. I think those are the things that we really have to look forward to, along with investor interest and confidence.
And also depending on how much they can get back, because besides that 10-12%, we know that we talked about over in our Green Peak program, we talked to the folks at Ascend Wellness, AWH, and how they're going out and putting on a lawsuit. Or not a lawsuit yet. I'm saying they're going to. But they're trying to go and go back to the IRS for 3 years of back taxes to start claiming that, because descheduling is just inevitable. So let's see if we can get back 3 years of taxes. Get all that money back, which could be $10 to $12 million, I think it was. They said that they can get that back in. You know, if they were to come to a company like Safe Harbor, I mean, what is that? What can that money be used for? What would be the best use of that money if it was being injected back into the business?
Oh, I think growth and expansion for sure, and research and development. I think there's still a lot of consolidation that's going to happen out there in the market. Although, I'm very protective of some of the small companies, the mom and pops and the boutiques, and I think they'll find a place long term as long as they can survive. And I think the 280E tax break is going to be huge for their long term survival. So I think they can use it for everything from, you know, expanding operations to improving their products to, you know, who knows, maybe they're going to go global. I think there's a lot of opportunity given the fact that we reschedule that's going to have to be considered on a worldwide level because there are international treaties that will have to be dealt with at that point in time.
Yeah. It's going to happen. I know that's like the one thing we're going to probably get out of all this when it comes to what the current presidential administration is going to offer. I mean, at least that is, I want to amplify and magnify the fact that this is actually a really good thing for the industry in general. And that just take this carrot and enjoy it. Like, really, do not worry about trying to get the whole pie right now. We're not going to get it. I don't believe it's going to happen right now. But take this descheduling. 2025, hey, you can start writing off. Oh, that's a wonderful thing. And I think, and you know, we already know accountants and lawyers are all starting to try to bake into the cake. Okay, let's try to figure out what the numbers look like. Let's crunch the numbers. Let's do some projections. Because then we can talk about that when it comes to the next earnings call.
Let's not scare the IRS, right? Not yet.
I'm just saying, pretty much will happen. But whatever it takes to keep the IRS back on their hind foot, that's actually good. I actually appreciate that. I love that because, you know, they've taken more than enough money from me the last couple of years. Just on self-employment tax, basically, right? But, Sundy, thanks so much for being on with us again. Website is Safe Harbor Financial, shfinancial.org. Real quickly, tell people when they go to the website, take a minute to go and talk to our listeners about what they should be doing and why they should be working with you and your team.
Sure. You know, on the website, there's two sections. There's obviously investor relations, and then, of course, just the cannabis companies. And I think that it gives you enough information. But I think the most important thing that we bring to the market at this point in time is the reliability factor. We are now in our 10th year of serving cannabis businesses. We understand the business. Our senior team has in excess of 55 years of experience dealing with nothing but cannabis businesses. So we understand the needs and we understand the market. And I think that reliability, we're not going to jump in and jump out, which you see banks doing still. So I think that, talk to a banker. We have a private banking model that allows them to have one banker for five or six states, which is really convenient for them. So I think there's a lot of good factors that we bring to the table because of our experience.
Fantastic. shfinancial.org. Again, the stock ticker. If you are, you know, what are going to put in, I'm sure, you know, you might want to be around for the ride when, you know, the stock market continues. So just not be focusing on the S&P 500 and all these other big funds. I think, you know, it's coming back into a bull market. I really believe we're going to get into that. So like a lot of companies are going to benefit. Safe Harbor Financial is publicly traded on the NASDAQ, SHFS. Make sure to go and take a look and see if there's somebody that you want to go and drop a couple of bills into their portfolio and be a part of the ride. So Sunny Seafried, thanks for being on with us again. I know that, you know, you're always available to us so many times and really love that you make yourself so available. Thank you again for being on with us here on Blunt Business.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. My pleasure.
Listeners, thanks for listening to another Blunt Business. As always, we'll come back again with another episode. Until then, we'll talk to you next time.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.